Hello, everybody, and welcome to our INE Office Hours for the month of January 2021, our very first one of the new year. Happy New Year to everyone. I hope things are going well so far, and I'm here to support you. I'm here to answer your questions about whatever program it is that you're in the Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology, questions you have about content, questions you have about client care, questions you have about marketing your business, whatever is up for you and whatever I can support you on, I'm here for. So the way that we do this is you can raise your hand in one of two ways. You can go over to where it says participants, and then at the bottom, there's a little hand up and you can put your hand up. That's the best way because then I can keep track. You can wave at me, but then I lose track of who I, as I go to one person, I forget who's next. So it's easier if you do it that way, but if you can't figure that out, that's fine. All right. So who has questions, comments? I love to start with successes. So if you have something that you want to share, a new client you just got, a new skill you just mastered, or celebrate anything when you're going to ask for support, that would be awesome. So who has stuff? Okay, I just saw a hand go up. Darcy. Okay, go ahead and unmute yourself, Darcy.
I wasn't sure I wanted to be the first one.
Oh, I don't bite. No worries. Break the ice.
Success. So I have been helping a girlfriend go through elimination diet.
Yep.
And conveniently, you are working on that as well. So it was so good.
That's good.
And we discovered she has, besides gut issues and bugs, she has oxalate sensitivities, but it was just perfect timing to, we'd already started on just pulling out the basics. And she's at the point now, she's kind of like, what do I eat? How do I move on from here? But it was good because it helped me walk through this with her as a faux client. So
it's great.
Yeah,
those are great. Those are hard though, right? The people that you know well, because they're not paying you, they're kind of feeling entitled. Sometimes, I'm not saying this is true of your friend, but they're kind of entitled. They call you more often than they would if they were a paying client. And you know, and it's challenging to put boundaries if they're a relative or a good friend.
So. Well, she really needed, I could tell she needed to take her protein drink out and she didn't want to. And she just kept having it and she kept having diarrhea. And I'm like, girl, just get it. And she finally did. But as a girlfriend, it's hard.
It is. And I've had to almost fire clients who were friends. Like, look, you're not paying me. I can get paid and take abuse, but you're not even paying me to abuse me. No, thank you very much. But I've done that. I did that with my husband, actually. Yeah. I told him, you know, other people pay me. And if they pay me to suggest things and they don't do it, they just keep paying me to suggest the same things over and over again, because if they need it, I'm not going to drop it. I said, but with you, you're just taking up my time. Like finally, years later, this year, he listened to me. He dropped 35 pounds. He's feeling great. He's hiking 7 miles every day, but it took years to get him to do it. So
I can see that. Okay. Questions. Yep. I am just starting the program. I'm getting through the.
And you're an IRSPT or CMDS or both?
I don't know the acronyms, digestion and insulin.
Okay. So both. Yeah. You're in both. Great.
So I've gotten through the first 7 or 8.
Are you doing them? Which order are you doing them in? Are you doing them?
Do digestion first.
Digestion first. Okay, good.
Yeah. And so as I do it, I'm trying to kind of think, how would I build this into my business and what would it look like? So you probably have it already there and I just haven't gotten to it, but do you have suggestions on, should I use your questionnaire? Should I make my own?
So here's the deal. You're welcome to do either. Okay. Because they're in the done, anything that's in the done for you sections, you're welcome to use. We have a little criteria, you know, you either use it as is, you can just hand it to people, or if you want to edit it, you can go in and edit it, but you just say, you know, adapted from, and you give my credit. That's all you need to do. It's easier if you have stuff that's pre-done. since we give you the ability, sorry about that, the doggy gets probably somebody at the door giving us mail packages. If you use the ones that I've given you, like the document form, and you can go in there and edit them, like if you want to add this or change the order of the questions or leave out a whole section, put your logo, that's probably the easiest way to get started, right? Okay. And if you want to start all from scratch, good luck, right? But you can take those questionnaires and you can actually create a Google Doc from them. I mean, Google Form, if you wanted to do that. And you could pick and choose the questions that you want to use. And that way that they can do it online. Some people still like to print out the PDFs, and all power to them. Yeah.
Okay.
So you can offer it in two ways. You know, you can keep, you can edit the document, use the PDF or use it as is. And if you wanted to create your own Google Doc because, or Google Drive, whatever it is, Google Form, then you can do that as well for those who want that. But the easiest way is to just use them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So my head is, you know, like I have all this great information and it's swimming with all these good facts. And do you suggest that we help people top down? Is that
absolutely absolutely? Because if you don't, and you go, we're going to just go right to leaky gut, and they have low stomach acid, or they have, you know, low pancreatic enzymes, you're going to be not getting the results.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Top down, and it really does start here. Right. And so many times people are like, I'm still having this. I'm like, are you sitting down before your meal? Are you breathing? Are you getting heart centered? Are you going into appreciation? Are you chewing? Are you slowing down between bites? And they're like, it's not going to work, right? Cortisol's raging in your system, disrupting all the attempts you make at taking digestive enzymes and probiotics and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would go top down.
Yeah. Okay.
And according to what they show up, that's why I use the general digestive thing, because it'll pinpoint where the areas are. You still can quickly go through, okay, are you doing this? This is going to be helpful. Okay, we're going to go right to this area because it's disrupted. But whichever areas are disrupted, according to the questionnaires, you start with those and you work your way top down.
No, that's great. Perfect. I needed that. I needed to hear it.
Yeah, you needed to hear it. And I'm going to just give you guys a story with somebody who did that, who was 3 months into NEPT, and she had taken my done for you presentation and went out in the community and did this presentation on blood sugar, which you have access to. And people were like, oh, she's the hormone expert in our community, and started coming to her with hormone problems. One lady comes in and says, I have a thyroid issue and they want to cut it out, and I'm scheduled for surgery in 6 weeks. Can you help me save my thyroid? And here she is 3 months into the program. She's an accountant turned health coach, right? And she'd taken other little health coaching things beforehand. She's going, what do I do? Came to a call. I calmed her down. I told her the questions to ask. She went and she did the digestive assessment. And all she did was follow along with the things the person had problems with. 3 months later, she'd lost all her weight. She was feeling great. And she's, to this day, years later, still has her thyroid. So don't underestimate the power of getting blood sugar and digestion in balance in far reaching ways, right? We want to jump in and do this fancy, sexy test on advanced lipids and blah, blah, do the oat test and all that, when you have the tools to identify. Now, for those folks who are coming to you and they're saying, I'm doing this, I'm meditating before I eat, I'm chewing my food, I'm taking digestive enzymes, I'm taking probiotics, and I'm still bloated, right? Those are the people that are harder, right? But for the most part, if you're working with the public, mm-hmm, they're not doing any of that stuff.
Yeah. Okay, good. Okay. Right. Thank you.
Yeah, you're good. Congratulations on having somebody to practice on. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a whole list of family members, but I am going to try to move past that.
One at a time though, right? Take on the one you think is going to be the most amenable, right? Yeah. Don't take on the gruff uncle with the cigar. I have one of those, the cigar smoking gruff uncle that thinks everything other than smoking cigars and eating pasta is, you know, is stupid. Yeah, don't take on them. Okay, great. Good job. Thanks, Darcy. Who else? It looks, oh, Darcy, your hand is up. Who else? I see Helen and I see Jill and Judy and Julie and Marcy and Martha and Stephanie. Who's got questions? You know, it's interesting. We used to do these on InstantTel seminar where you can't see each other, you just talk. And so it was always just this blind list that I didn't know who was really there. And now that we are on Zoom, people are still staying behind the list. Okay, Judy, go for it.
I'm just new in the program. I just started in the NEPT.
Yeah.
Anyway, I am going through the allergy elimination right now. And I have been allergic and sensitive and since I was a child.
Yeah.
And I've been told about the salicylic acid. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing research and I found out there's a connection between the phenols and the salicylic acid. Mm-hmm. So, and then I was taking, so I have that in my mind.
So you have your chart, right? You printed out your little chart and you can go down the list of all the food. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in a lot of these food groups. I think I'm one of those difficult people because I've had gut problems, lots of issues. So anyway, I also took this liposomal. I've been taking it regularly. Liposomal vitamin C, 5,000 milligrams. Mm-hmm. And when I took it on this, I've been at 5 days. When I took the vitamin C powder, my ears started running. And this had gone away. I've had this running in my ears and oozing and cracking. And it's been
when terrible. You say running, is it a liquid or is it a mucusy kind of thing?
Mucus. Mm-hmm. And it's like the tissue sloughs off. And
so then like a dry skin kind of thing where the skin gets all cracky. Okay.
Yes. And mucus inside. And then my throat too is really.
And so it was gone and then it came back when you started doing the liposomal. No.
I've had this now I've been using this liposomal C for a long time, for I'd say maybe 3 years,
yeah,
4 years. And I've really never had any problems with it that I know of, but it started about 2 years ago after all those hyperbaric oxygen treatments.
Right.
I'm not sure if it's like too much of a detox reaction to my system because I'm such a slow methylator.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's because 2 months after I started this, I went off of the hyperbarics. 2 months after, I started with this running and itching in the ears. So I've been
okay. I want to make sure, and this is something I'm going to model for you when people start to give you a story and you're getting lost in the story. It's okay to. Okay, time out. I want to make sure I'm following you. So I want to make sure I know where the vitamin C comes into play. So the ears oozing started after the hyperbarics.
Yes.
But the vitamin C you've been taking for a long time. And you started out telling me about the vitamin C. So I'm not sure where that fits in.
Well, I figured out that MSM is an ingredient in the Vitality C. And I'm thinking sulfur is right. There's a lot of sulfur also.
Yep, sulfur.
Would that be in the sulfur group, the MSM?
The MSM is for sure in the sulfur. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm suspecting that too.
And it's methyl, right? So it's methyl sulfur. So if you have an issue with some of your genes, like a COMT, and that can cause, if you take too many methyls, it can cause some backup of that and you can get symptoms, not this symptom that you're describing, but you can get other symptoms like anxiety, hypervigilance, just feeling like agitated, depression, those sorts of things.
Yes. So I have a lot to figure out. I am going to be such a good, I'm going to be so good at helping people because of my life experience.
Yeah. People that have really tough cases are great at helping others because you can help the most. But I want to go back to this because I would change your C. Okay. I've never seen a liposomal C with MSM. Usually the liposomals are liquid. So I would change to something that's a simple, like Seeking Health has a real simple, it's made from sunflower lecithin. It doesn't have soy ingredient, you know, so it's a really good liposomal C, right? Okay. And I don't know, was the other one you're taking, was it buffered C or was it actually liposomal? It's buffered, very different, right? Very different. And with folks with oxalate sensitivities, have to be careful about the ascorbate because theoretically it can shoot up, you know, the oxalates. Okay. So I would say switch out your vitamin C, do true liposomal. Liposomal is expensive. It's about $1 a gram. So 5 grams are going to be $5 a day. So, you know, be careful with that, but make sure if, you know, if you do the combination of liposomal with a buffered, that it doesn't have the MSM.
Okay. And then I have another question about the glutathione.
Mm-hmm.
I have that pathway too. That SNP,
GSM or GST. Yes. There's several of them. Yeah.
Well, I don't know exactly which one it was because I don't have it in front of me. But
okay. But if you have issues with a SNP with glutathione, you need glutathione. Mm-hmm. But you have to look at if you have other, like a CBS SNP, and you back up the. You can't take too much glutathione. Right. Most people, you know, if you don't have some genetic stuff, you're going to be okay with it. But if you have sulfur sensitivity and you take too much glutathione, more than you need, that extra sulfur, your body's not going to make its own. So the extra sulfur it would have used to make the glutathione backs up and it can go into sulfates, sulfites. And if you've ever had an experience with eating dried fruit, that's that, you know, bright colored, they're preserved with sulfates, sulfites, one or the other, that people get really bad symptoms from that. You can get that sort of a reaction from taking too much glutathione.
Okay.
Okay.
I take one. I see that naturopathic endocrinologist down in Florida. Mm-hmm. And she actually had this, I went through all the testing.
Yeah.
And Saber Labs in California actually.
Oh, yeah.
Compounded it for
they compound.
Me.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been on now for.
And is it a liquid? Is it a capsule? Is it an acetyl glucose glutathione? Because glutathione doesn't get absorbed orally very well, except liposomal and N-acetyl glutathione. Mm-hmm. So if it's not, then you're just getting a whole lot of sulfur components. It's going to break down the glutathione because your body is really, unless you're doing liposomal, which really gets into the stream, if you're taking it orally, it just gets broken down and then your body has to reconstruct it.
So you think the liposomal is better?
I think liposomal is better. I mean, this is a cream that you have? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Transdermal is good. Yes. Transdermal is good. Just okay. Go easy with it and make sure that it doesn't aggravate your symptoms. Because whenever I have somebody do a cream or a liquid, I always start with teeny, 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 tiny doses and then build up. So you just put a little speck, you build it up and make sure you're not having some, any kind of over detox reactions, right? If you try to detox too fast.
Yeah. And I've been doing the heavy metals for years since I was in dentistry. You see, I'm in dentistry for 20 years. And then I ended up, I had patients in my chair and I would look at their medical health history. Then I would look at their x-rays and I kind of was putting everything together. And I started learning then at that time towards the end of my career about biological dentistry. So I retired from dentistry because of that.
Because of that.
And so that is.
And so you've had exposure.
And I've been exposed and I've had 2 children with major health issues, birth defects and, you know, problems. So, and that's another thing is for my looking at this, I was thinking about how I'm going to market myself. And I was thinking I was going to market myself either through dental offices, getting them to refer.
Yes.
I've been there.
You've been there, done that. And you understand. I think it's awesome.
That and or else a chiropractic office because I understand structure and how important that is. Structure is so critical.
Right. And you could do both, but I think that the underserved community is the dental. There's a lot of chiropractors who already know and do and, you know, study functional medicine or bringing in functional medicine coaches. But I think that the dental community is underserved.
Yes.
Very underserved.
Oh, by all means. And see, I realize the need for that. And people do not have the information on oral health and how it pertains to total well-being. And that's actually was a big part of my health journey and my problem, the underlying dental.
Yeah. It is for a lot of folks. And what you'll see if you go, as you go through, I don't know how far along you are in the program yet, but module 3 is all the history stuff. And there's a whole section in there on dental history and pictures of the relationships between meridians and the dental health. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really own that and really live with that and learn how you can figure out those things for people.
Yeah, I understand that really well because that's my field.
Yes. So
it's critical.
Yeah, it's critical. So let's go back to your question about the ears and what was the original question?
I'm trying to solve my problem with these runny ears. It is so irritating.
And it started after the hyperbaric.
Yes, really.
You never had it before the hyperbaric.
Right.
Okay. Right. And then is it getting worse over time, better over time, same?
Same.
Okay. Does anything change it?
When I don't eat.
When you don't eat, it gets better.
Yeah, it got better when I started this elimination diet.
Okay. Now the elimination diet is not eating. It's just eating different foods.
Well, yes.
This is a real good distinction. And as you're working with people and asking questions, it's important to be real clear. Mm-hmm. If you said I stopped eating, then I say either you got a digestive issue that's causing it, or there's some foods that you're eating on a regular basis that are causing it. So then you do the very gradual reintroduction to see when it comes back. If you do an elimination diet, and you know, if you go through the phases that we laid out, and you suddenly feel like, oh, wow, you know, I feel better after I've eliminated the first 6 foods in this list, which is another reason for doing it, like I phased it, like group 1, then group 2, then group 3, because if you eliminate one group and you suddenly have an elimination of symptoms, you can go back and go, oh, it's maybe that one I just did, but because it could be a 3-day delay, you know, it could be any of the ones I already removed. So it helps you to identify the suspects much more easily, right? So if you've felt better doing the elimination, at what point in the elimination, what foods, or had you eliminated all of the phase 1 foods?
Well, I eliminated everything except for beef and lamb and peas and green beans. And I did have some licorice tea, which I think I'm sensitive to the licorice because I took that with the vitamin C, and that's when my ears really...
That's when your ears started coming out.
And licorice did show up on the LCAT test too as a moderate suspect. So I took that.
Okay. So now you know to get rid of the MSM, change your vitamin C, right? Change it to something pure, like a liposomal, you know, Seeking Health is real pure. They don't have any additives. And then so right now, are the ears bothering you or have you added foods back to?
They're better. They're not running.
They're not running. Okay.
And I'm not getting this extra tissue.
Beautiful. So now you're at a stable spot.
And
you've got to be very, very careful about every food you add back in and track it to see if there's a culprit or a group, you know, a family of culprits, because it's not just digestion here, because you're eating foods and it's gone. So there's something in there and maybe it is going to be so easy and it's just the MSM.
Oh,
fingers crossed, right?
I think there's going to be a lot because of the salicylates and the phenols.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been told the salicylic acid.
Right. Salicylates. Yep. 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 And so those you're going to add later, stay off of them for at least a month, right? Work on your gut, work on repairing your gut. That's the stuff that's super important. And then see what you tolerate and amounts that you tolerate. You know, unlike a food allergy where you have a sensitivity, you're going to have a reaction, an immune reaction, regardless of how much you eat. Unlike that, like with the oxalates and the salicylates and all, it's quantity amount. You know, there's a threshold and you have to figure out what your threshold is. And your goal would be to, over time, do things to balance your system and get you over that threshold limit. Mm-hmm. In module level 2, to incentivize you to finish level 1 as fast as you can. In level 2, module 3, we have a hour long, sometimes 45 minutes, sometimes more than an hour on all of those different food families, the food, I call them the religions, right? You have all that in there and you'll learn so much more when you do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. I've been really studying these sheets over. So
great.
Really appreciate it because this is basic. And that's why I'm glad you started with this. Thank you.
You're
so
welcome. You're welcome.
For all my life.
That's awesome. I'm really happy. And I'm really happy that that's working out for you.
I've spent thousands of dollars on tests like the C-Rex, the LCAT, thousands of dollars. I've done so many different panels, but it's been very difficult for me.
Yeah. And those are allergy. Well, remember I talked right at the beginning of those are allergy panels. They don't test for sensitivities. We don't have a test that you can run and say, tell me, am I sensitive to oxalates? There's no test like that. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's much harder, but when you do the allergy stuff, and that's why I incorporated this, like get rid of these stuff first, which are high on the allergy lists. And then we'll look at those others and not everybody needs to, but some people like you do.
Yes.
Okay.
And I did the Intero labs, which came out positive for the gluten intolerance, non-celiac, and then the casein. So
now you know for sure those are not good ones to, to do.
So this is number one priority for me.
Priorities.
Thank you.
Good. You're so welcome. All right. So hopefully you guys learned some stuff from that, because what I like to do when people ask questions is to go into why am I asking certain questions? Because it helps you in your ability to discern, because it's so easy for you to ask somebody a question and the next thing you know, they're telling you about their Aunt Tilly's cat. And you're like, okay, slow down here. And you see how I did it respectfully. I didn't say, hey, because I was confused because she started talking about one thing. And then I'm like, okay, I'm going, okay, maybe there's something in that vitamin C, but then she says the ear. So I was losing it, right? So it's okay to say, okay, slow down. I know you're excited. I know you want to share all this stuff for me. A lot of people, maybe you've never had the opportunity to share this, but I want to get it. So I get it sequentially. Here's what I want to know. And you can create a timeline so that you get it. And it helps for me to get a big piece of paper and draw a line on it and do it. One of the things, and I stuck it into the module, I think module 3 for NEPT, but we had it, you know, the WOW challenge. If anybody did the WOW challenge that we did before Shine, the magic questions, there's a lot of great information in there. And that sequence of how you do that history, because it's so critical and so many people are not doing it that way. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Who else? Julie, hi. You have a question. Yeah. Let's unmute you.
Hi.
Hi.
So about the middle of summer, I realized that I had been feeling like crap for 5 months or something. I have autoimmune and have had pretty extensive allergy testing, and some things that I actually have an anaphylactic reaction to. Oh. I was testing as though I wasn't allergic. My allergy testing was really all over the board.
Well, here's I'm just going to throw in a why maybe. So an anaphylactic reaction is an IgE mediated. And if most of the food allergy tests are going for IgG, you're going to miss it. My husband had the same thing. He's anaphylactically allergic to soy instantly. It didn't show up on the test.
So my prick tests, you know, I pricked my back, pricked my arms, and
those are IgEs.
Yeah, I was allergic to things that I wasn't normally allergic, that I normally didn't have any digestive problem with, and I was not showing as allergic to things that I have extreme responses to. So anyway, that's sort of the background. I have done elimination diets before. Great success. Figured out I was allergic to corn or sensitive to corn, cut corn out of my diet, lost a lot of mucus, lost a lot of return sickness. So this summer I realized I've been feeling like crap for a really long time. And the only thing that really changed for me in the summer, my husband and I bought a lake house. And so we were eating sandwiches and we were drinking beer. And we were working on the house. So I'd grab a beer in the middle of the day to go do some kind of construction project or to go down and hang out by the water. And I realized I was having a lot more gluten than usual.
Yeah.
So I cut gluten out of my diet. In 4 days, I felt like a different person. My brain came back online after a few weeks, you know, and into a few months, I feel better. I'm not best, but I'm better. Yeah. I want to do the Zoomer.
Yeah.
For gluten sensitivity, but I know I have to be eating it. And so I'm terrified. How much should I eat? What should I
don't
eat?
Don't do it. Do the EnteroLab. Okay. EnteroLab is a stool test. It doesn't require you to be eating it because it's measuring IgA and they're sitting like soldiers lining your gut waiting. The okay. other is the reason you have to eat it. It's IgG. It takes a while for it to build up after you've been eating it for a while and it's in your blood. So I'm a big fan of the EnteroLab stool test to test for IgA.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Good job. Yes. And the Zoomers are nice and I will never, ever ask somebody to go back on a food they suspect they're allergic to so we could test.
Yeah.
It just ethically, it's just a hard one. So yeah, I would do the other one.
I was like, I'm going to have to, clear my schedule from all work-related stuff because my brain goes dead.
It's not worth it. And you have an autoimmune disease. So first of all, if you have an autoimmune disease and you've been eating gluten, even if it's just a small amount, you're never going to get over your autoimmune disease. And I've told this to people. I'm like, I have never worked with somebody who can overcome their autoimmune disease or even improve it by continuing to eat gluten. You must get off of it. Must. Wow. And I would say probably lifelong. And if you've not done your genetics, you do your genetics and you most likely have the a variety of HLA SNPs that are predisposing you to autoimmune. And it means, unfortunately, lifelong, even if it doesn't show up as celiac yet, right? Even if it doesn't show up that way, it's a lifelong avoidance. So I would say that's a good thing to get used to.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem here.
Yeah.
When you feel so much better, I was like, I don't ever want it ever again.
Don't do it. Yeah. So yeah, if you want to confirm it, and they have casein and they have gluten and they have, like, I think they do 10 or 11 if you want to do the whole stool antigen panel, corn and, some of the common ones. They don't do like the 200 that a lot of the labs do that you can test for, these little tiny things that, most people don't even know what they are, let alone eat them on a regular basis. Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah. Thank you. And I'm glad for you. I'm glad you got that response. I'm glad you were able to see that. Right.
Yeah.
And the sad part is when you just like let it gradually creep in, it gradually erodes your well-being in such a way that it's like that, the whole story about the putting the frog into the pot and then turning up the heat. They don't get it. That it's getting hot and you need to get out. And that's what happens. You just gradually erodes your well-being versus sometimes you take it, especially if you have an anaphylactic type response, you take it and you immediately have hives, hay fever, whatever, Yeah. So it's so insidious. And so many people do that. Well, I added the gluten back and I'm not I'm not bad. Well, okay. But that autoimmune disease is never going to go away as long as that gluten is in your system.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Great. Thank
you.
Good
job. Thank you. Who else? Anybody else? I saw Sharon just joined us. Hi. Mary just joined us. Hi. And Martha. I saw Martha here earlier, but not now. Stephanie, awesome. Did you have a question?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Sure. Why not?
Always got questions. Always got questions. Okay. So one of the things that I'm noticing that I'm curious about is I've been tracking, my blood sugar as best I can. Like, I kind of wish I had the continuous monitor because it would help me so much more.
Yeah.
But, I've been because, I'm basically an insulin resistance, but I don't know exactly how bad or what, what's behind it. But what I notice is that my blood sugar responses are not consistent. So like I can eat the same food and have a very different response one day to the other. And I do realize that how quickly it's absorbed might make a difference. So what else I eat it with.
What else you eat with it, right? How stressed you are at the time.
Yeah, but it seems like, I guess I could track it a little bit more diligently, but it's like I could have the same meal and it affects me differently, And I'm not sure what that is. So I was just curious if you had any.
Yeah. So I have some theories on that. So, number one, stress level, right? Stress level, environmental exposure, mold can be one, right? Some days, like it's humid out today. I'm sneezing. Like, I am sensitive to mold, always have been. And I'm starting to sneeze. I'm like, why? Oh, it's humid out. It's drizzly. It's rainy, right? And that's going to affect your blood sugar. Stress is physiologic stress on your system. Lack the sleep. How much sleep did you get the night before, right? If you got a shorter night of sleep, you're going to be more insulin resistant the next day. And a food's going to affect you. And every now and then you'll get some weird thing that there's no way you can figure it out. And you just let it go. Yeah. Right. But those are all the things that can play in. And stress is, you know, cortisol raises your sugar. I wrote a blog post or an email a few years back. And I wrote, the subject line was, I ate a candy bar today. And we got so many people open it because people that know me know she doesn't eat candy. What the heck prompted her to eat candy? And I wrote, well, I didn't actually get to eat the candy bar, but my body responded as if I did because I did this and I got stressed. And instead of handling it this way, I handled it this way. And I actually call it the candy bar eating effect of stress. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you're concerned, you're worried, if you didn't get enough sleep, the state that you eat under. So really remembering, this is the hardest thing for me, remembering to go into the breathing and appreciation before you meal and chew each bite, because you start eating and you go, I got to get this done. And it doesn't get digested well. And then that puts a strain on your digestive tract. So you may have some digestive imbalance. That's
definitely. Yeah. I definitely have something going on with my digestion. Yeah. So
that could explain why there's variability that way. Okay. And again, I want to mention about the continuous meter. You know, you have to have a prescription and all that, and they're not cheap, but there is this place called Levels that you can sign up for it, and they will give you it's expensive. The first, it's like $397, you know, for the first initial thing. And they give you two months worth. So they give you four. Yeah. So they give you four. So it's 2 months worth. And you get this prescription from whoever the doctor that works for them is. So you can renew it up to a year. Now, I haven't tried it yet because I checked it out. Now I'm going to go and see if I can just renew that prescription without having to pay the Levels fee. Levels will charge I think it's $200 a month after that. So it's a little more than paying the $70 each thing. So it's about $60 more, but the advantage is you can get it and you can just do it for a couple of months and, you know, monitor your stuff.
Yeah, right? That's a good point.
Right. And then the other thing, and I'll let you guys know if that prescription that came with it that said, oh, you get 12 months of refills, if I can just contact that company and just pay their, you know, $70 for the things and do it that way. So I'll let you guys know. But that's worthwhile to do if there's any way you can get somebody to give you a prescription for it. Different doctors, like here, I have mixed feelings about how it is here in Texas, because my license, the first thing I did was order one for my husband, and we ordered it through Edwards Healthcare online. And I ordered these for him, and they gave them my number, whatever, and we were able to order it. And it went on. Then we said, oh, it's easier if he just goes down to the Walgreens. And I wrote a prescription for him, and he went to the Walgreens, and we got it for several months that way. And then all of a sudden they said, oh, we can't do this. So there was some snippy young pharmacist who said, well, it's not within your scope of practice. I'm like, well, why have you been giving it to me all along? And why? So yeah. So I think it varies from state to state and from pharmacy to pharmacy. I never tried like going to a CVS or whatever else to try it that way. So you might have a chiropractor that can do it. If there's a naturopath that's licensed in your area, I don't know about acupuncturists. They may even be able, if they have an NPI number, usually they can order it. So, you know, it's worth having it. It's not cheap, but for me, it gives me so much information and it helps me control myself, right? If I'm like, if I overeat, even really good low glycemic food, it's too much and it raises the sugar too much, right? And it helps me because I'm constantly, oh, look at that. Whoa, I just went up to 102 and I'm, that shouldn't have gone even up that high. So it gives me some good information.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to. I also worry because I notice that I spike and drop and then I'll spike again. So if I'm not continuously monitoring, I'm always wondering if I missed a spike.
If you missed, you probably did, you know, most likely you did, unless you're somebody who's monitoring every 15 minutes consistently.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I do, but not always. Like sometimes it's a half an hour between readings. So yeah, that 15-minute interval that I missed, I'm always like, what did I miss? Did I miss something important? Yeah,
exactly. If you're hyperinsulinemic, right? If you're producing too much insulin, yeah, it's going to get it down, but it's going to go too far down. And then it's going to trigger gluconeogenesis to get it back up again. And so you get this crazy stuff going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it helps to know. I mean, I know people who are like, I'm eating this and it's grazing my sugar. I'm like, it's good to know. One person who was in sweet spot a couple of years ago, she wrote me and said, but I don't understand it. All I had was a curry that I made and it had the carrots, sweet potatoes, and brown rice. And I don't know why it went, and coconut milk. And I don't know why my sugar went up to 172. Like, I know why your sugar went up to 172, and that's not fair. Why? It may not be fair, but you know, some people are born without a limb attached. Some people are born with specific stuff. We have to deal with our lot. And it's the same with me. I ate 6 chestnuts over the holidays and my sugar shot up to 152. It's not fair, but if I live my life with, oh, that's not fair, then I'm just going to be stressed all the time, worried. So I just go, oh, well, I guess chestnuts are on my hit list. I'm not going to eat chestnuts again. I may experiment with them next time with a huge salad with 6 chestnuts on it and see if that works, because I can do that with pineapple. But it's all lessons, right? And the more you learn how to do this with yourself, the more you're going to be appreciative of other people and know their situation and know how it feels when, you know, you get into that situation. So yeah,
exactly. Good. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. Who else? Questions, comments? Martha, you are at an angle. Like your camera must be angled or something. You're like, it was like Marcy one day, she was upside down. And I'm like, how are you doing that?
Your camera. I'm trying to get attention. All right.
Not paying attention, yeah. Questions?
I have some about melatonin because I've been studying that, and I was reading something that you shouldn't take melatonin if you have blood sugar issues. And
I've seen it both ways. I've seen that people say, oh yeah, it can raise your blood sugar, and other things that say it can lower your blood sugar. So I think it's one of those things that it's going to be individual.
Okay, because I've been working on my genes, and I do have a gene that it disrupts my sleep. So I am working on my sugar, and because that's, you know, kind of a root cause. But I just hate that wake up during the night because it takes me a while to get back to sleep. Yeah. So I've been trying to figure out. So I've started taking the melatonin right at bedtime. I've been taking extra magnesium.
But you're still waking up even with the melatonin?
Yes. And okay. I was taking too much, and then I found out maybe
some people only need like 0.5 milligrams.
Because I had like those wild, really weird dreams. And then, of course, I can't get back to sleep after that because it's right. Disturbing. So then I stopped taking it altogether. But I just need it sometimes. And so I'm trying to figure
out. Did it help you? Did it help you to not wake up then in the middle of the night?
I'm still waking up. So I think it's more related maybe to the blood sugar. But okay, then when
you wake up, measure your blood sugar. And this is something when people are waking up in the middle of the night, have them measure their blood sugar. Have them make sure you measure your blood sugar right before you go to bed and see. Now, sometimes you don't catch it because it's going to go high and wake you up. If you had a low before that, right? So there's a couple of things. Or if you have a cortisol dysrhythm where your cortisol is going up in the middle of the night, it's causing that. So you want to know, is it a dysrhythm in the adrenal circadian, or is it that something's triggering the cortisol, like a blood sugar dip? So those are things to look at. Now, there are some other things you can try to see if that's actually helpful. If you get some magnolia or phosphatidylserine, and you take that at bedtime, and it may not work the first night, you may have to do it for a whole week, but if it does keep you from waking up, then likely it was a cortisol spike.
So that would be the magnolia
or phosphatidylserine.
clearing. Okay. Yeah.
Magnolia's got, you know, it's an herb, so it's got, I'd rather that than isolated phosphatidylserine, but you can try one or the other or both, you know, see if they both work. The magnolia has other properties, so it's calming. It's very good for blood sugar control.
So that's okay to drink before bedtime then, because it's an herb.
Yeah. You can take it as an herb. You can take it as a liquid. I ordered it as a powder, and it was when somebody was here, I think it was Angelica was here for one of our conferences. And I said, well, look, I have this magnolia, let's try it, you know? So we put it in a, you know, the, whatever the instructions were for how much, and we did it, and it doesn't blend real well. It kind of was sitting there, and I used my little thing to get it to blend. The taste was like, it was crazy. It like made your mouth get all real astringent, made the mouth get all funny. I mean, I could have tolerated it, but I couldn't really recommend it to people to take that way, because it was challenging. It was challenging. So there was one person I had recommended it to, and she did try it that way, and she was like, I can't do this. She got the tincture, and it helped her a lot.
So, well, I think I did order some magnolia. So if I mix it with chamomile, would that help it taste better?
Oh, the tincture is fine. It's the actually the powder that has a horrible taste. Most tinctures taste like alcohol. There's not, you know what I mean? It's like the alcohol overrides it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does it come in any other forms than powder?
You can get it in capsules.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because what I ordered something from Mountain Rose. I was thinking that they were flower buds, but that might be something else.
Try it. And if it's tolerable for you, take it. If not, buy some of the little capsules and cap them quick and make your own capsules from it.
Well, I could do that. Okay, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
But I hate swallowing pills too, but I don't want something that tastes nasty.
Well, taste it and see. Just try a little bit and see. If it's that bad, then don't take it.
Because you wouldn't want us adding at bedtime coconut milk or stevia or anything.
I don't think that'd be, you could put stevia.
Okay.
You try stevia.
Or Lohan,
you know, something that's not, you know, if you don't want to take coconut milk because it's calories, it's going to turn on your digestion, but the stevia and Lohan won't turn on your digestion.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I can live with that and see how that, well, I've been trying to track it because it just really helps you be able to evaluate it. And so I've been trying to write down, like, it's not consistent what time I wake up though. And that's, but I'm not consistent about what time I go to bed. So I'm really having to work on trying to go to bed at the same time. And that is hard to do.
That's something I've just decided I will never be able to do that. And I've given up trying because otherwise it's just, I'm going to beat myself up over the head. So
do you wake up at the same time every day then?
Oh, no.
Okay.
It's not the best, right? What you're saying is what we should be advising people. But for me, it, because of my life and everything else around, I, you know, sometimes I'll go to bed at 2 and get up at 8. Sometimes I'll go to bed at 2 and get up at 9. Sometimes I'll go to bed at 11 and get up at, you know, 7.
It's just okay, well, see, that's what I see all the advice is. And
the advice is definitely not what I do. You know, I could say mother said, but I say not what I do.
Okay. Well, like today I got up at 8 because I stayed up till midnight.
Yeah. And well, that's good. 8 hours of sleep. Find the rhythm that works for you, right? And that's what we have to help people with, because you come up with these ideas that everybody has to be in bed by 10 and then get up at the, and it doesn't always work for people. You have to create the rhythm, and sometimes you have to look at where your circadian rhythm is now and then moderately adjust it a little by little to get to a point. Like if I travel from here to Hawaii, I'm good at getting up early, go to bed early. I never adjust myself. It's 6 hours, 8 hours, whatever, earlier there. And I think it's 7 hours earlier there. So I'll go there and then I'll be getting up at 5:30 in the morning, which is awesome because I get sunrise, right? And then I'm like exhausted by 9:30 at night and I go to bed and it's wonderful. But I never adjust to that time zone. I just live in my time zone times while I'm there, you know, so.
So do you take naps?
No, I never take naps. I never get tired in the middle of the day. But I'm just saying, usually when I'm here, I mean, it's 10 o'clock, it's 11 o'clock, it's midnight, it's 1 o'clock, it's 2 o'clock, and I'm not tired, so I don't go to bed. I just keep working, which is bad. I know. And I've been getting better at that. But what we want to be teaching people is to create a rhythm that works for you, not the artificial rhythm. And in some households, you can't go to bed at 9:30. When my kids are around, there's no way I could get to bed early because they're like late night people. They like to stay up. Right. Although my son got on in better mode, he's on East Coast time and he was going to bed by 11 o'clock or midnight, which is early for him. And so I was like, okay, he's not staying up. But if I don't get to see my kid except for once or twice a year when they come visit, I'm not going to go, well, it's my bedtime, I'm going to bed. I'm going to hang out with my kid. Right. So you just have to, there's the ideal and there's real, and we have to help people to find the most ideal for them. It's going to give them the best results that they can actually do. Right.
And it creates another mode of stress. Make yourself fit into something that's not good.
Exactly. So if somebody goes to bed at midnight and gets up at 8, that's great. If they go to bed at 1 and they get up at 9, that's great. If it works for them and they're consistent with it. And people on weird shift habits, you know, they work shift work, they have to adapt their bodies to whatever it is that they work. You can't expect somebody who's on shift work to go to bed at 9 o'clock on the weekend, right? If they're used to working all night long and then on the weekend you're expecting them to go to bed at 11 even, it's going to be hard for them. Their body it's not good to try to adjust and then not adjust by that big a amount of time, by 8 hour blocks. But it is, you're totally right that it's better to be consistent. But find the consistency that works for you.
Right, and that's what I'm trying to find.
Yep.
What works. Yep.
And what works for you is what works for you in terms of how easy it is to get to bed and then get up. But also, what are your blood sugars doing? I know for a fact that on, like last week, I got short sleep. I got 6 hours a few nights and 4 hours once or twice. And it was brutal for my blood sugar. It was brutal. My blood sugars were all over the map and I was craving food nonstop because of the leptin ghrelin imbalances that get created. It was craving. And, you know, if you can help people who are having cravings to figure out how to get the right sleep schedule. And when somebody realizes that's for me, what's so incentivizing for me, no. And I get 8 hours of sleep. I get up. I don't eat until 3, 4, 5 o'clock. I eat, I'm full, I go to bed, I'm fine. If I don't sleep, I'm wanting to eat by 11 o'clock in the morning. And it's like unbelievably hard to control. And then when I do eat, I can't stop eating because I just have that crazed appetite imbalance. And it's hormonal. It's hormonal. And we can help people to see that. That it's not your frailties. It's not that you have no willpower. It's that these hormones are just coming in. And how can we control that? We can control that by helping you to sleep better. Right? There's three problems with sleep, right? There's the can't fall asleep, right? Then there's the fall asleep fine, but can't stay asleep, waking up in the middle of the night. But the third one is the one that most people aren't talking about is don't get to bed on time. Just don't get yourself to the bedroom. That's another problem with sleep. That's always been my problem. People would say, oh, why don't you take this to sleep better? I'm like, I don't need anything to help me sleep better. What I need is somebody to pick up my butt and get it into the bed and lay me down and turn the lights out and make me stay, right? That's what I need. And that's what a lot of our folks are. It's voluntary sleep disturbance. Voluntary insomnia.
So should you fall asleep the moment you hit the pillow or?
Well, according to the Aura, if you fall asleep immediately when you hit the pillow, you're really deprived. You're like really sleep deprived and it'll come up and it'll flag it. Everything was good for me except your latency time, they call it, was too short because it was like, boom, I was asleep within 2 minutes. Right. So 5 to 10 minutes though is really a good. You know, that's really balanced. And that's generally where I'm at. There are times though when I've got my brain working and I'm just trying to figure out a project and I just can't fall asleep. At that time, the herb passion flower is amazing for turning that down. It just turns off the chatter, chatter, chatter in your brain.
Does that work immediately, or should you take it when you start to, because that happens to me, I get an idea and then.
Yeah, I would say if that tends to keep you awake, then I would take it as soon as that. I did that last night. I took it preemptively because I had, my brain was working and I'm like, I want to figure this out. And I'm going to figure it. It's too late. I took it. There's this one from Herbalist and Alchemist called PhytoCalm that is passion flower and a few other things that I find works really well to just shuts my brain down. And so I did that prophylactically last night.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm not kind of need, I know when I'm going to have a little anxiety or something. So I take the melatonin. So is that question, or should that question be on our assessment? How long does it take you to fall asleep as a way to know if somebody's.
Yeah. I wonder if it is, it's a good question to have. Most people don't know how long it takes them to fall asleep, and that's the right answer, right? If they say, oh, I don't know, I have no idea, then it usually means that they fall asleep within a reasonable time. But if they go, oh, I'm still laying awake after a half hour. So it's a good idea to add that to the assessment. I don't know if it's there or not.
Or if they...
Sleep assessment, right? It's definitely on the sleep assessment. Okay. So body freedom pillars assessments, there's like 12 pages of very detailed ones about each of those habit areas. And I'm sure it's on the sleep assessment.
I'll double check, because I was checking that for myself as part of my tracking. Am I falling asleep right away? Which you're saying means you are really,
you're like really water, tired.
Water if you're thirsty. Yeah. Waited too late.
You waited too late. Yep.
And so I'm trying to check that. It's part of why I'm waking up at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So look at the cortisol piece. It could be GABA. I mean, you can look at your genes to see if you have some of the genes related to GABA. It could be combination. According to my genetics, I should have insomnia, anxiety, depression, brain fog, ADD, because I have all genetic problems in those areas. And had I not been taking care of myself over these years and really focusing on my nutrition, I'm sure I would, because I have a lot of siblings and they're all on anti-anxiety medications, hypertension medications, et cetera. And there would have been me had I not taken charge. So the epigenetic modification is so important. It's just finding the right balance for each person.
And unfortunately, people say, oh, you just got the good genes in the family. And that's not really true.
So I didn't get the good genes in the family. Because if I did, then I feel sorry for the rest of them, because I look at mine and go, gut, brain, gluten, autoimmunity, right? I don't want an autoimmune disease. I'm going to take care of myself because I have that tendency.
And mine were all red in that section.
Right. And right now, you know, when I push myself to not sleep for a while and then I can't get up in the morning, I'm thinking maybe I really whacked out my thyroid, because I do have some thyroid genetic SNPs. Maybe I whacked out my thyroid from not sleeping and not really, you know, caring for all those factors. So it's we're complicated, and we do have some individuality. We have some general stuff and we have some individuality. And it's important for us as practitioners to really recognize the individuality, right? And also recognize the emotional pieces that play into it as well. The old traumas and emotional, you know, whatever, fears and anxieties related to all that. Former, you know, I'm a food addict, right? I was big time food addiction in my teens and 20s. I mean, I ate like crazy when I was a kid, and then I started gaining weight and freaked out in my teens and said, no, I got to stay slim. I can't do this. And then I started into food, you know, just like not bulimia per se, but my bulimia, I would never throw up, but my expel the food was exercise and fasting. Even back then, I'd go on the bagel diet and I'd have one bagel a day for 3 days straight, lose the weight and then gain it back. So it's that binge purge cycle, whatever it is, you know, using food as something other than just nourishment. And a lot of folks have it, and there's an emotional root to it. Yeah. All right. Good. Any other questions?
I get a good night's sleep.
Yes. And give things a try. It's all, we're experiment grounds. That's why I call the lab memberships, because we're experimenting. This is your lab. Everybody gets to experiment on your lab and see. So is just the passion flower help? Phytocom is herbalist and alchemist. It's an herbal blend. David Winston is the founder of that company. He was my main herbal teacher over the years. Okay, Helen, yeah, go ahead and open up your line or type it in here. Can you get sound, Helen? She said her camera's not working. Let's see. Yeah, and it's really tough when you're most productive at night. And I think if you're going to try to change your circadian rhythm from that, you can't just listen to people and say, I'm going to go to bed at 9 and get up at whatever. It doesn't work that way. So you move your bedtime back by 10, 15 minutes a day. And fit gym 15 minutes a day, and then you naturally get up a little earlier as a result. So Helen, if you can open up your mic.
Yes, ma'am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hi.
Oh, I am so happy I can finally talk to you. I've been wanting to talk to you since last year, but my camera, I bought another computer with a camera, but I don't know how to get it to function right now. But thank you so much for letting me speak. Today, I just wanted to say hello.
Hello.
I've been wanting to do it for about a year.
Nice. Which program are you in?
The insulin resistant.
Great.
And I had a lot of so much tragedy last year, but I emailed, I think Christine?
Christine, yeah.
Yes.
Christina.
And I got her email today, and I am so excited to get active again. Trying to bounce back from all my setback, death, and all sort of things, but I'm thankful for the opportunity to continue that class.
Absolutely, yeah. We're not taking it away from you, and it happens. Life happens, and I can send all out. You know, here's this program, and it's 2 years, and it takes you 2 years to finish, or 3 months. It takes you 3 months to finish. Things come up. Right? Life happens. And, you know, we want to support you in finishing getting it done. So yeah.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to what life has for me this year. And I'm bouncing back. So that's my main purpose of wanting to join today, to prove to myself that I'm last year is gone and yep. I'm here. So I'm here, I'm alive, and I'm ready to, you know, bounce back from myself.
And ready to join in. And here's the thing, for all of you, whether you have questions or not, it's a good idea to come to the calls because you're going to learn a tremendous amount. Who didn't have a question but learned some stuff today? Who had learned from a question somebody else asked, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to learn that. And you also, sometimes you come and then you go, oh yeah, I had a question about that too. Let me chime in here, right? So just come and appreciate and enjoy. And yeah, we're here for you.
Thank you. One last question, please. I wanted to find, I heard on earlier that the dental connection to health is on module 3, I think. Will I be able to?
Well, not in you're in insulin resistance. That's in the full NEPT program.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And you'll have the opportunity if you finish any IRSPT, or if you want to upgrade and get into level 1 of NEPT, it includes IRSPT, and we actually will give you credit for 100% of whatever you paid for IRSPT towards getting into level 1. So if you want to do that, just let me know and I will have somebody reach out to you to talk to you about that. Then you get all the other pieces in level 1. And level 1 also includes the complete comprehensive history taking, but it also includes other things, like it has a food allergy module. It has a module on, you know, the various pillars like stress and sleep, et cetera. It has a module on how do you balance particular organs and gland systems with particular foods and nutrients? And there's a couple more in there. So mitochondria has a module on mitochondria and how do you support energy through mitochondrial health. So if you're interested, let me know and I will have somebody reach out to you and then get you upgraded.
I'll do that. Thank you.
Yes. All right. Let's see. Stephanie said, I learned so much from listening. Yeah, and I've loved how you've been involved with all the calls with the elimination diet. And, you know, however, you guys have access, you guys in the full NEPT program have access to the Empowered Self-Care Lab. You have, we give you that for 2 years to take care of you. And the more you participate in that, I know Judy's been doing that too, because it, you learn a lot from the other people, but you also learn like, what are the questions that people are asking? Where are some of their misconceptions and how can I learn from that, how to handle it? And you can see how I handle it. If you like how I handle it, you can model it. If you don't, you can learn what not to do, whatever. Okay, great. Let's see. Oh, and you love the teaching part that goes with that. I'm a natural teacher. One of my colleagues who does this thing called like, what's your spiritual path or whatever, she had me take a quiz. And I took the quiz to see what my thing is. And I'm a teacher. That's what I am. Messenger, I think she called it. That's what I do. So I take every opportunity for everybody's question. I want everybody to benefit from each other's questions. So I try to make it a broad teaching based on that question as much as I can. Thank you for that. I love that part. I love doing that. And I realized last night, so some of you who are in the IRSPT have access to, and you, the NEPTers, so most of you should have access to it. It's a bonus that we offered last year. And Darcy, you signed up recently. And if you want access to that, we can easily give it to you. But it's basically a marketing bonus that I'm doing today. And it's called How I Made $40,000 in 8 Phone Calls. And so I put it all together, like, how can you reach out and offer high-end coaching programs to people? And I'm giving you my emails, I'm giving you my form, I'm giving you everything you need to do that. And when I was calculating it last, I was writing a slide on the statistics, I actually realized I didn't make $40,000 from those 8 phone calls. I made $84,000 from those 8 phone calls, because 4 of the people that joined the $5,000 program actually upgraded into our ERC program. And so when I added all that together, so that's how you think about it, is getting a few people into a high-end program. How do you do that? How do you word it? And that's what I'm going to teach tonight at, I'll put the link in here so anybody that wants it can have it. It's at 5 p.m. Let me see. 5:30 p.m. Central Time. So calculate that. And here's the link.
Will you be recording that as well?
It will be recorded.
Okay, good. I've got to paint a ceiling tonight. So
yes, I don't know where we're putting it yet. That's what my team is struggling with, because it crosses programs. It's like, this person gets it and this person. So we offered it as a bonus for some NEPT. We offered it as a bonus. We also offered it as a bonus for IRSPT. So we'll figure out where to put it, but that's the link to it if you can make it. Oh, wait, it just went to Michelle. Woo! Did Michelle ask a question? I just posted a bunch of stuff and it looks like it went to...
Yes, Dr. Rita Marie, I asked the question.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, so you just got a bunch of stuff that was meant to go to everybody. Let me see what else I said. Oh, okay, where did it go? To Michelle, let's see. Okay, so I just changed that link to everybody. And then the other thing that I had written in was the Herbalist and Alchemist was the, here we go, PhytoCom Herbalist and Alchemist. Okay, and I'll send that to everybody. So let me see what your question was, Michelle. I didn't catch that yet. Let's go backwards. Unless you want to just tell me out loud, that's easier. Let's see.
Okay. I wanted to talk about metabolic acidosis and talk about a kidney panel that I have. Am I able to share my screen?
You can, yeah, go ahead. You should be able to.
Let me pull it up because I have like 50 million different.
It's super helpful when you share your screen and show labs for other people who haven't maybe done certain panels before, even if it's way beyond you, it's a learning opportunity as well. Okay, so.
So I'm looking at this client and what I was concerned about was that her CO2 has gotten worse, mm-hmm. and the anion gap has gotten worse.
Mm-hmm. Protein.
And also her EGFR has gotten worse and her, you know, creatinine and that kind of stuff. So I wanted to know, in terms of metabolic acidosis, what are some things that we should be concerned with in terms of working with someone with that?
Right. So first of all, the numbers here are not severe enough for it to be medically classified as metabolic acidosis. So, you know, in the danger zone, right? But that's something to be concerned about. She's moving in that direction.
Yeah.
So, and her kidneys, it seems like kidney function is a biggie here. Her BUN went down, creatinine went up. So that's still within the, but the GFR went down. So it's, again, not in a danger zone for the GFR, but it's heading in the wrong direction. And as functional practitioners, we always want to be catching things before they become a disaster, right? We're heading in the wrong direction. So the questions all become like, what's this person eating? Because the acidosis has a lot to do with eating acid versus alkaline foods. What's their stress level like? What kind of medications are they on? Because all of that stuff will affect kidney, and it'll also affect the pH.
Because I also noticed that her fasting blood glucose has gone down. I mean, her A1C has stayed the same. Her insulin has also gone down. So I'm wondering if she's also overstressing that pathway, even though it's not showing up in things like the A1C.
Yeah. So the A1C takes 3 months. What was the last time? August. So it takes that long. But the fasting glucose is so variable that you can't, I mean, it could be 71 today and 85 tomorrow and, you know, 90 yesterday. It's such a variable number, whereas A1C is going to stay consistent, and it has. So saying that her average glucose has been pretty consistent, but the fact that her insulin went down, the insulin is still in a very good range. So we can look at it that way and go, oh, she's made some good improvements, right? Or possibly there's something going on with autoimmune pancreatitis, like, you know, something attacking the pancreas, anti-insulin antibodies, anti-islet cell antibodies, GAD antibodies. So any of those things could be possibilities. She's got an LDH that's high. So there's some liver stress here going on too.
And then the ferritin is extremely low.
Yep. Where's her iron? Did you do iron?
Yeah, we have iron. So the iron has gone down, but more so the ferritin has gone down even lower. And then of course she has those high triglycerides. So that's why I was looking at the insulin stressing and the glucose.
What's the HDL? I see that just below there. It looks like it's 30. It looks like it's gone down. Where are we? HDL. Yeah. Oh, no, 79. It went, it's about the same. Yeah, so it's inconsistent with what we would expect to have a high triglyceride with a good A1C and a good glucose.
Yeah.
Right? So
that's why again, I was looking more looking at the liver.
The liver is big time stressed. So when LDH is one of those that has isoenzymes, so it might be liver, but it might be something else. So I would say she's high enough with the LDH that I would order an isoenzyme test to follow up with that. Okay. It's consistent. It's gone down a little, but it's consistent. So there may be some other stuff that's missing. And you just order an LDH with the isoenzymes.
Where the tissue damage is then.
Say it again.
Looking for where the tissue damage.
Where's the tissue damage actually happening? Right. LDH. So. And a lot of times, well, we'll say that, you know, functionally it's out of range. The doctors will go, we're not running that test because it doesn't really matter. So it's, there's 5 isoenzymes for LDH. Mm-hmm. And here's an article on it if you want to read more information.
Oh, yeah. I use the panel that I do usually has the isoenzymes, but for some reason it didn't show up in this one. So I have to contact the lab and ask them why did.
Oh, do they? Normally they don't do that unless you ask.
Well, them. Yeah, I have a specific panel that I
see
contacted with the lab to do.
Yeah. So just for everybody's reference, there's 5 isoenzymes. LDH1 is primary cardiac. So we could be thinking it's the liver, but it's not. And that's something we want to know about. LDH2 is white blood cells. So you'd look at what are white blood cells. LDH3 is lung. LDH4 is pancreas, kidney, and placenta. And, you know, given what we just talked about with the pancreas, we'd want to look to see if it's a 4. And then 5.
I was thinking that also was because of the GGT being relatively low.
Yeah, the GGT is better,
but it's still lower than what we would want.
Now, well, the GGT, when the GGT is low, and last time it was low too, look at B6 status, because B6 is an important cofactor for GGT.
Okay.
And so her iron is not that low compared to the ferritin, but I don't see that the iron ferritin, it just looks like anemia. It looks like an iron deficiency anemia.
Okay. So the fact that the ferritin is low is just the iron.
I think it's just, it's storage. There's not enough of it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That looks like classic iron deficiency anemia.
Okay. And the GGT doesn't necessarily relate to stress to the liver.
When it's high, yeah. When it's high,
okay.
Right? And GGT will go up when there's pesticide, persistent organic pesticide exposure.
Okay. So the other thing was her homocysteine went up.
Yep. So more stress in that area. You want to look at her vitamin status. Was she taking B vitamins and stopped? Does she have methylation in her genes? Her D could use to be higher, but it's not terrible.
Yeah, it's not that bad. Yeah. And then the last part.
And the hemoglobin and the hematocrit are low because of the iron ferritin. Yeah. So I think that's classic.
Yeah.
RDW is similar. Neutrophils.
A small bacterial, maybe.
White blood cells are reasonable. Probably more, bacteria. So, but I don't see anything that, serious over there, just functional stuff you can deal with. And how old is this person?
She is 50.
50, okay. And how's her diet?
She will say it's not good.
She would say it's not good? What do you say?
Oh, I agree. So it's good that she'll acknowledge.
It's good that she agrees, because a lot of times they don't think so.
But I was also curious about the thyroid, because of the relationship between the free T3 and the free T4.
Yep.
That has got
The free T3 is reasonable.
But in relationship to the T4, it says
it looks like an overconversion, which we wouldn't normally see.
Yeah, which is weird.
Right. And overconversion can sometimes be excess testosterone. Does this person have PCOS?
I don't know. She hasn't said that's.
But it may be, a lot of times when there's an overconversion, it's excess testosterone.
Okay.
Yeah. Because her thyroid numbers overall look actually really good, other than that ratio. And that's, that's a little bit off. And it looks like her free T3 went up and her free T4 went down. So I really look at the testosterone and then do some research on if there's other, that's the one that's most stands out in my mind.
But whenever you have overconversion, that's the one to look for.
Yeah, it's testosterone. There may be other on the other things, but I, off the top of my head, I don't recall. Let's see.
I have to look at Dr. Datis's thing on that.
Because that's what we usually see it the other direction.
Yeah.
Right.
Under conversion. Yeah.
Yeah. What does it mean if T4 is too high? Here's an article in what is it? It's in Medline, but let's see. Enlarged thyroid. See if it's big. It's a big article. I'll give you the link to it if you want, and you can look it's too hard to skim it and see if there's anything of use in here. But I would just do some searches on, what kind of, and in the software, in this program, you should be able to find it.
Okay. Right?
You look at this, not in the lab report, but if you go into the actual and you click on that, they usually have a list of the things that are off that would be making that off.
Okay. And one last question in terms of techniques, how do you work most efficiently with medical providers? Because I had a situation recently with a client that was referred to me by the medical provider, interestingly enough. But then there just started to be this like back and forth, because I thought she referred me the client to be able to help them with their gut issues. And then she got into, oh, well, you need to tell him to do this, 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 and this. And I was like, well, first of all, I'm not a medical doctor. And I said, secondly, I said I was specifically going to work on the gut. And then she went behind me and started prescribing all of these enzymes and things of that nature. And so when the client gets back to me, they're confused. Oh, should I use this? Should I use that? And I don't know what to say to that person. I mean, what I basically said is that I don't have any experience with the supplement protocol that the medical doctor shared with them. I only have experience with what I've done.
Was it a gut protocol that they shared? Or is it just specific enzymes that you...
He just basically recommended quote unquote generic enzymes where I had gotten specific.
Very specific. I'd have it. I just talked directly to them and I'm like, I'm a little confused because I thought you were referring this person for gut stuff. And then you went and prescribed stuff that might be counter to what I'm doing. So what's the deal and what relationship do you want us to have with this person? I want to help. I'm here to help. This gut area is a specialty of mine and I'd love to support you. So please give me direction on how I can best support you.
Because I got really confused because I don't view a referral as someone who should come in and micromanage me, you know, because in my own experience, you know, like when my dentist referred me to somebody for TMJ, you know, that was like pass the baton and, you know, hey, go for it. But in this case, she was like hovering and it was just a really weird, bizarro kind of world. And I didn't want to create tension for the client, you know?
Right. That's what I would address that right with that doctor and say, hey, I really appreciate the referral and I really want to help this person. But I'm confused. Can you help us sort out what's our relationship with this person?
Okay. Have you been successful in working with practitioners like that?
I haven't done a lot of that. I mean, for a long time, most everybody that I work with now is not local. It's online, right? And so I've worked in the past with people, but I'm not in a relationship like that. I mean, it's usually they'll refer and then they kind of, like you said, wash their hands of it.
Because I was thinking of going after that kind of quote unquote market. But after this experience, I'm like, you know what, maybe I need to just stick to direct to the consumer and not go that.
Well, you know, I think I don't want you to just let go of that because it could be a good source of clients for you and you can get some interesting cases that way. But I just make it real clear. I mean, communication, direct communication. I mean, you know, you do heart math and you know about that. You come from your heart, you express what's there and you say, how can we make this work for us, for both of us and for the client? My biggest concern is the client.
And that is because I was concerned that they would be overwhelmed and and confused. And I don't want them to think that it's me versus them.
No, not at all. You want to be seen as the healthcare team.
Yeah.
Right. I'd approach it with them directly and come from your heart and no accusing, no nothing, just strictly from your heart and from your concern for the client.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. How are we doing? We have about 6 minutes left. Does anybody have one last question or do we wrap it up? I see Karen joined us. Hi, Karen. Do you have a question? Unmute.
So I mean, this is kind of real. I just had a training all day, an orientation. I got a job, but so I had to do that. That's why I couldn't come on when it started. But I guess I'm just not sure kind of the focus of these particular calls, because you have so many different types of support. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have access to all the NEPT calls. And so there's those calls. This is a call that's open to people who are NEPT, but also in IRSPT or CMDS or other practitioners as well. So I would say more than half the people on here are probably NEPTers. And then the rest are, you know, in various programs. So you can ask anything you want here, right? Questions about content, questions about a particular client in general. We've covered a wide variety of things today down to the last part with Michelle sharing her screen on a lab. So any of those things can happen. If you want me to look at a lab on one of these calls, I used to say, oh yeah, just upload it.
No.
You want to look at a lab, you're going to share your screen. You're going to show me what your questions are, and I'm happy to look at it because that makes it real easy for us to facilitate. And then the other calls you have, like there's a case study call with NEPT where people will submit cases, and you're welcome to do that, where you have to fill out a form and give us all the information. And we usually only do 2 or 3 cases per session, so we can really dive deep into that person's case. Then you've got your open coaching, which is like this, but just generally it's just the NEPT people all the time. It's just the NEPTers. And then you've got a content curriculum and content call where we specifically address like questions about particular modules and how to implement and that sort of stuff. Although a lot of times those calls get, people are like, okay, that's it. And then we just jump into open coaching after that. So yeah. And then
I did post a question in the NEPT and I didn't know if I was supposed to ask it here instead, because I don't think there was a response. But
where did you post it?
It was a couple of days ago and it was just about,
but where did you post it?
The NEPT one,
the call,
the practitioner page. Yeah. The NEPT.
You mean it on Facebook?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Facebook is separate. So usually, you know, Facebook gets questions and we go back and forth on Facebook, but if you have a question you want to ask here that you ask there, you can.
It's just about a lab. I didn't know if you heard about it. I just came across it by accident the other day. I was just curious if you heard about it. I guess it's called the GX Sciences, and they have a nutrigenomics testing. I was just curious if you
know. No, I don't. I'll have to go look at that. I haven't
knew about it or something.
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm always looking for new nutrigenomics tests because there's a lot of people have a problem with 23andMe and not wanting to do that. So I'd be happy to look at it.
Well, I just did Dr. Lynch's. It took me like 3 months to get my results. So I got my strategy and DNA one.
Oh, good.
It's only 120 page report.
Okay. I want to look at that. One of our ERC people uploaded hers so I could take a look at it, because I want to get mine done and compare.
Send you mine if you want. I don't care.
Or bring it to the next NEPT call and okay. Let's look at it.
So if I look on the schedule, I'll find that.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. It's on the schedule. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I have that. It's very interesting. Well, he kind of, added more to all the pathways. And it's so funny though, because even when he's talking about the new ones, he goes, oh, I should have put that there. I'm like, oh, geez. So yeah, he's funny.
But, he's funny. Yeah. I'm excited to look at that because, you know, right now I wish I could just take this part of this one and this part of this one and this part of this one and put it all together into a really well thought out and comprehensive, but you know, it doesn't always happen.
Right. Oh, that was just my quick question. I'm just
okay. Yeah, I'll take a look at that because I know there's a bunch of them, and I actually have an email. I have like 2 or 3 of them that I'm looking at, and then there's Self Decode, which I signed up for a year of it, and I haven't yet uploaded my genes to it, but I want to see how their reports are because they take 23andMe, and I want to see how their reports are. So there's a lot of it, and you know, it just takes a lot of time to do all the research and money because each of those tests costs like $200-$300 to get done. Right. So I've been doing that.
Okay.
All right. Okay, guys, good to see you. Come, you know, just put all the calls on your calendar. This is what I recommend. If you're in NEPT, go to the thing, put them all on your calendar, and as best you can, block off the time to be on all the calls. Obviously, nobody's going to be on every single call we ever do, but it helps because the more you learn and the more repetition and the more of this spontaneous stuff that you get, like somebody asks a question, it may not be in a module anywhere. It's just something that's, you know, new, exciting, and you get to learn so much from each other. And I have this brain that works in a way that I love. I see things in biochemical pathways. I used to be in computers, and so that's how I saw things. I saw things in flowcharts and how did this code go and all that. And so it was, that's how my brain works. And so you may say something and somebody else may not think anything of it. And I'm like, tell me more about that. And what about this? And what about that? Because I'm pulling it all together. And that's what I want you guys to get out of this. The knowledge is one thing, but it's what you do once you have that database in there, what you can do with all the connections. Similar to a computer, you can upload all this data, but if you don't have the right instructions to be able to interpret it, it doesn't do you any good. But if you do, like the artificial intelligence softwares that are out now, they can actually take that information and based on a set of rules and algorithms can come up with things. And that's what I want to teach you guys. And more and more and more, you're going to be starting to think that way the more you fill your data bank with the information. And there's a lot of information in that program and a lot of biochemical pathways. And yeah, I can't wait to get you guys digging into it. All right, and those of you who are finished, are in NAPT and finished level one, and you're ready to move to level two is now open. And that's like the most amazing module. Those of you who have been through micronutrients and macronutrients and food principles, you're gonna get, it's like, it's a lot of hours worth of stuff, but it's fascinating. And it just pulls so much together.
Okay. Can I ask a quick question?
Who was that?
Oh, me, it's Steph.
Oh, hey, Stephanie.
I just wanted to know, because I'm interested in learning how to read basic blood tests, like not all the crazy stuff, but just the basics. Is there a document or a resource somewhere that I can access that so I can brush up on
yes.
that?
Yes, here's how you can do it. The module is actually later for learning it, but here's where you go. If you go to where it says resources and you click on Master Health Tracker.
Okay.
Go into the Master Health Tracker. There's a little description. It's very short, but it's a little description. So you can put all your numbers in and it changes color based on whether it's, you know, in the range and whatever. But then off to the right-hand side, there's just a little description about what that possibly could mean.
Okay, great.
What kind of follow-ups. And then in the module, there's videos. There's lots and lots of videos.
Which module is that? Is that in two? Level
it's
two?
It's in level four, actually.
Level four.
Because, and this is the reason I debated where to put it, is because it relies on understanding all the different body systems. And so we go through nutrition mastery is level two, and then body systems and hormone mastery is level three. And then comes the labs, because a lot of times the labs depend on knowing how all that stuff fits together. I mean, we've offered the lab piece separately in the past, and we may do that again in the future. But right now we're focused on moving everything over from the old site to the new site. Okay. So yeah, but that's okay. A great way to learn it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right, guys, have a wonderful rest of the day, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye.